Patty Freeman graduated with a bachelor's degree in recreation management and youth leadership from BYU, and then pursued an MS in recreation administration from Western Illinois University, and a PhD in human performance from Indiana University. She returned to BYU in 1999 to join the recreation management and youth leadership faculty, and she has served as chair of that department since 2006. During her time at BYU, Professor Freeman has directed study abroad programs to New Zealand, Australia, and Fiji. She served for 6 years as an associate editor for Skole, a journal of leisure studies and recreation education, and since 2005, she served as an associate editor for Leisure Sciences, one of the top journals in the discipline. Professor Freeman is also an accreditation team site visitor for the Council on Accreditation for Parks, Recreation, and Tourism. In addition to her substantial publication list, she has made numerous presentations at state, regional, and national conferences. She is a member of the Society of Park and Recreation Educators, the National Recreation and Park Association, and the Utah Recreation and Park Association. Professor Freeman and her husband, Eric Anderson, live in Wallsburg with their twin boys, Caleb and Hayden, and sons, Solomon and Maxwell. We welcome her husband and sons here today. All four of their sons have been adopted from Ghana. She has spent most of her life skiing and backpacking and enjoys any time outdoors with her family on foot, skis, bikes, horses, rafts, or four-wheelers. Sister Freeman.
Thank you for that introduction, Dr. Webb. I appreciate it. I thought you were going to say after we're going to go skiing or backpacking or be on horse, so which I invite all of you to do that. The invitation to speak today was difficult for me to accept. When I heard the word forum, I immediately thought of forum speakers I have listened to over the years, and it was readily apparent that one of these things is not like the other, and it is me. I'm not Condoleezza Rice. I'm not Ken Burns, but I hope what I have to say will be of value to you today. I've been humbled and stressed by this opportunity, but I'm grateful, and I'm even trying to feel grateful for it today. I'm thankful for my husband, the critical work he does in our home, and for all of his talents and abilities. I appreciate my family, my parents and my in-laws for being here today, my friends and each of you, and for those who are watching and listening on TV. When I received the call in mid-April from Associate Academic Vice President Jeff Keith inviting me to speak, it was the first day I had spent much time in my office since returning from Ghana 2 weeks earlier to bring home our two new adopted sons. My heart, mind, and spirit are focused on the singular task of adjusting all six of us to our new family life. Through patience and persistence, Dr. Keith gently persuaded me to accept the invitation. In one conversation, he gave me the option of speaking now or waiting a year. I can't imagine waiting a year for this. I felt impressed that the currency of some of the experiences my family and I were having would be relevant to my topic, so I chose to speak today. My intent is to encourage behaviors and priorities to help us be more intentional in using recreation to benefit aspects of our life that matter most. Both my husband and I came from families that highly valued time together, doing mostly simple recreation activities. In particular, we both love being outdoors and appreciate the important role it has played in shaping who we are. Throughout my life, I've spent countless summer weekends at my parents' cabin in the Uinta Mountains, where in the early days, there was no electricity or indoor plumbing, and almost every evening was spent playing games around the kitchen table until the generator would run out of gas, the lights would flicker, the kerosene lamps would be lit, and we'd head to bed. Although there is now electricity and running water, there is no cell phone or coverage or internet service. I treasure time at my parents' cabin and the haven of peace and beauty it is. I'm grateful for my parents' sacrifice to build and maintain the cabin all these years and consider it a privilege to take our boys there. Growing up, I was interested in most things outdoors, as has been mentioned. I loved to backpack and fish and camp, ski and ride bikes. Some of my most cherished memories, however, was time spent quietly sitting next to my dad while we sat in a duck blind or hunted deer. I met Eric, my husband, near the end of my first year teaching at the University of Utah, and almost 10 years after graduating from BYU. You can leave BYU single. I knew from living in the Midwest and the South for 9 of those years, interacting with people from all walks of life, and observing many marriages, I wanted to marry someone with whom we could share our recreation interests. So when after 3 short months of dating, Eric said, "Marry me and ski for free," I knew I'd found the right match. He really said that. But he had a more serious proposal and much more to offer than that. But we do, in fact, enjoy free skiing as a family thanks to Eric's winter work as a ski instructor. So it was true. Eric and I have had the opportunity to adopt our 4 boys from Ghana. Our oldest boys are twins, and we adopted them when they were 20 months old, and they're now 11. About 2 years ago, Eric and I had the realization we could do more in relationship to the commandment to multiply and replenish the earth. Although we were nearly old enough, or actually old enough to become grandparents, we needed and wanted to add more children to our family. So just 3.5 months ago, we adopted our 2 youngest boys. They are also biological brothers and are ages 7 and 4. We've made 4 trips to Ghana in the process of adopting all of them. None of our boys are true orphans, so we feel very blessed to have seen their birth homes and villages, meet some of their family members, and learn a little about their culture and circumstances. When I was hired at BYU in 1999, the Recreation Management and Youth Leadership Department began to earnest and focus its graduate program and faculty research on youth and family recreation. At the heart of this effort was the family, a proclamation to the world, and the recognition in the proclamation that wholesome recreation is one of the principles upon which strong families are built. I also believe it's a principle upon which strong individuals are built. My involvement with recreation and the outdoors throughout my life, coupled with my professional and academic background, as well as the experiences we've had in Ghana, have clearly shaped how I view recreation and what matters most. Although most of my examples today are from a parent perspective, I believe the topic has application across the lifespan, whether we are young or old, single or married, with or without children. I hope as I talk, you will make connections to your own life circumstance. Before talking about recreation, let's briefly consider what matters most to us. I suspect you and I have similar thoughts. As I think about what matters most to me, it is relationships with others, my family, spouse, children, parents, siblings, my Father in heaven, my friends, and even myself and my well-being. Today, I want to focus on the importance of intentionally creating and protecting space and time for personal and/or family recreation that can strengthen relationships with those who matter most to us. Being intentional suggests we are purposeful, proactive, and mindful. To me, it implies acting rather than being acted upon. There are 2 assumptions I will share and discuss prior to considering ways to intentionally protect and create space and time for recreation. The first assumption is that recreation has power for good, and the second is that play and recreation matter. The first assumption is that recreation is wholesome by definition and has power for good. To me, the modifier of wholesome in front of recreation is not really needed, but it does imply certain behaviors. If we aren't engaged in healthy and moral action or thought during our unobligated time, then it likely isn't recreation. We may just be killing time, passing the time, or worse, none of which are recreation. To better understand this, let's look at 1 definition of recreation. Recreation is an emotional condition within an individual being that flows from a feeling of well-being and satisfaction. It is characterized by feelings of mastery, achievement, exhilaration, acceptance, success, personal worth, and pleasure. It reinforces a positive self-image. Recreation is a response to aesthetic experience, achievement of a person's goals, or positive feedback from others. It is independent of activity, leisure, or social acceptance. To further illustrate, let me quote from an essay by Dr. John Tanner, former academic vice president at BYU. The essay was written about labor versus rest, and he transitioned from rest to recreation as the essay progressed. I quote from the essay's end. I like the term recreation as opposed to, say, vacation. Vacation implies an empty, vacant time. a period of loafing, of hanging out, of passing the time. Recreation, by contrast, reminds us, by definition, that periods of time out can serve the serious purpose of renewal. At its best, recreation allows us to recreate ourselves in order to return to ordinary life, renewed, refreshed, and reinvigorated. The highest function of play is recreation. Let us not only remember the Sabbath to keep it holy, let us make time in a hectic, harried 24/7 world for recreation. These quotes tell us what recreation can be, indeed should be, an experience leaving us better off than when we started. If we view recreation as good, powerful, and even spiritual, we may think about our individual and family recreation differently. The second assumption is that play and recreation matter. There are many reasons they matter, and much research has been done on this topic. I will share three I think are important. First, play is essential to healthy physical and emotional development. Second, play and recreation engender persistence. Third, family recreation can help shape how women and mothers are viewed. When we traveled to Ghana this last time, we were there for a few days before we received our new boys. During that time, we stayed at the temple housing by the Accra Temple, attended a few temple sessions in church, and met several missionary couples. We arranged to have our new boys brought to us at the temple housing the day before we flew home. The 30 hours we had with them prior to returning home were challenging for all. The oldest was inconsolable much of the time. He was scared, anxious, and sad. On top of it, language was a barrier and food a challenge. That first afternoon and evening, the oldest would wear himself out from crying and fall asleep for short respites. When he was awake, my husband had to stand in front of the door to block it from being opened as the boys sought their escape. It's kind of funny now. It wasn't at the time. We began to wonder about the placement and, more pragmatically, how we were going to get them on the plane the next night. I was so naive on the flight over. I actually said to Eric at one point, flying over to Ghana, "Oh, I'm so glad we won't be bringing little boys home this time who will cry the whole way back like our other boys did." Little did I know. Older boys do that too. But that evening, Sister Hyde from San Diego, who was serving in Accra with her husband, stopped by our room to see how things were going. The oldest was asleep at the moment, and we didn't say much other than it was a struggle because he was so distraught. As she was leaving, she said almost as an afterthought, "Don't forget, you can always give them a priesthood blessing tonight when they're sleeping." I don't think I would have thought for Eric to give them a blessing while they slept. Sister Hyde was inspired to not only stop by our room, but to share that thought. I will always be grateful to her for following the Spirit. Later, when the boys were back asleep for the night, I asked Eric to give them a blessing. With the boys being asleep, it wasn't a blessing for them to hear and consider, but it was a blessing for their spirits to hear, and for us, as their new parents, to hear. I remember only a few specifics from each blessing, but two statements in the oldest boy's blessing penetrated my soul. First, he was blessed very quickly that he would feel comfortable with us. Second, he was blessed that by coming to our family, he would, quote, "learn what it feels like to be a child and to play," end quote. Of all the blessings he could have received, he was blessed to learn what it feels like to be a child and to play. Hearing those words confirmed to me not only that the placement was correct, but also that Heavenly Father values play and family fun. No doubt our new boys played in Ghana. Based on the oldest boy's skills, he's clearly played a lot of soccer. But in watching and listening to him and considering the various impressions that have come to my mind over the past few months, I suspect his play was overshadowed by work and a feeling of responsibility, not only for his little brother, but to help provide for his family. I've often felt that it wasn't free play, but burdened play he experienced. I am grateful he knows about work. Without question, work is good for individuals and families, and it can unite families, as I have seen it do in our family. That priesthood blessing on that challenging night, however, confirmed in my heart and mind that the immediate and critical task for us as parents was to ensure he knew childlike joy, excitement, security, and care, and that he had ample opportunities for unfettered play that fills the air with shouts of excitement, squeals of delight, and pleas for more. On our first morning home, our older boys got out some old bicycles, and within a few hours, the joys and excitement of mastery was felt. The first few weeks we were home, each time I saw genuine smiles, heard laughter, and witnessed excitement, I knew the salve of play was helping to soothe sadness, assuage fears, create bonds, and develop trust. According to Dr. Peter Gray, a psychology professor and contemporary expert on play, free play is essential and normal for emotional development. On his Freedom to Learn blog, published on the Psychology Today website, he writes, "Children love to play in emotionally exciting ways. Little ones delight in being tossed into the air or swung around by adults. Somewhat older children enjoy somersaulting, cartwheeling, and other forms of spinning around, swinging high and climbing trees, leaping from heights onto water or snowbanks, and zipping around on devices that permit speed. Children of all ages seem to have a sense of their limits in such play. They take risks in moderation. The joy of play, combined with a modicum of fear, is the exquisite sensation we all identify as thrill." Continuing on with his quote, "Mother Nature," and you and I would think of a Heavenly Father, "has designed our children to play in all of these, quote, dangerous ways, because she knows that play teaches them not just the physical skills they need for dealing with emergencies, but also the emotional skills they need. In such play, children dose themselves with just the level of fear they can tolerate, a play just below a level just below the threshold of what might cause them to freeze up. In this way, they learn how to manage fear, how to prevent it from incapacitating them. They learn that fear is normal and healthy, something they can control and overcome through their own efforts. It is practice such as this that allows them to grow up able to manage fear rather than succumb to it. Play isn't just for children, however. According to an article on play, creativity, and lifelong learning, the author states, despite the power of play, somewhere between childhood and adult play, many of us stop playing. We exchange play for work and responsibilities. When we do have some leisure time, we're more likely to zone out in front of the TV or computer than to engage in creative, brain-stimulating play. By giving ourselves permission to play with the joyful abandon of childhood, we can continue to reap its benefits throughout life. As a side note, that picture you're looking at just now, I'm going to talk a little bit later about my mother, but the last time she went off that cornice, she was in her late 60s. Noted psychologist Mihaly Csikszentmihalyi concurs, quote, "Life without fun is not much worth, as many people who have achieved success and wealth at the expense of stress and depression realize. It should be easy to have fun, yet most of us have forgotten how to play, how to invest life with enjoyment," end quote. Persistence is defined as voluntary continuation of a goal-directed action in spite of obstacles, difficulties, or discouragement. It is one of 24 character strengths identified by positive psychologists relating to an authentically happy life. Persistence helps us become our best selves. We learn persistence quite logically by doing hard things. Without challenge, persistence isn't needed, but play should be fun and recreation freely chosen. So how do they stimulate persistence? The act of much play and the demands of many recreational pursuits naturally include elements of challenge, problem solving, and complexity. Play and recreation also provide the element of choice. Continue on or call it quits. Hard work, focused concentration, and diligence are often required when a toddler stacks blocks to build a tower or a child learns to ride a bike. Persistence is needed when my boys do two-a-days with their lambs, with their sometimes unruly lambs, to help them be the best they can be for the upcoming county fair, or when labored steps are required to get up a steep mountainside, and when realizing that the thrills of the rapids in whitewater are frequently preceded by lots of flat water and often accompanied by upriver wind. I hope my boys are starting to realize if they can do hard things while at play and as they recreate, they can transfer those skills to school and to life. According to Dr. Martin Seligman, quote, "We deprive our children of persistence. What I'm trying to say is that we need to fail. Children need to fail. We need to feel sad, anxious, and anguished. If we impulsively protect ourselves and our children, as the feel-good movement suggests, we deprive them of learning persistent skills, end quote. The third area that shows us that play and recreation matter is that I believe that through family recreation and participating in recreation, it can shape how women and mothers are viewed. So consider your mother or other women and the influence they've had in your life. My mother skied on Utah State's ski team and won a second-place medal in the slalom in 1948 at the conference race on skis that are about 8 feet long, I think, and made of wood. My mother taught my father to ski. Together, they taught 6 children to ski. My mother taught me to fish when I was young. My mother reads every day. She studies scriptures and other doctrinal texts. My mother earned her bachelor's degree in 1948 from what was then Utah State Agricultural College and values education and learning. My mother created simple traditions and experiences that still draw us all back home. She supported our interests and encouraged us to pursue adventures. My mother exercises almost every day. My mother hiked with us. Growing up, these things helped me to view her as a woman of competence and confidence. Because of what I saw my mother do and be, it helped me to see what I could do and be. She was the master of few things, but the doer of many. My mother has an adventurous spirit. I wasn't taught fear from my mother. I wasn't taught to be afraid to leave her side. I wasn't taught that the woods or the world were scary places I should avoid. Instead, I was encouraged in all things. I was taught the world and the woods were places that I could and should go to, that I could develop the skills needed to be in them. Indeed, she prepared me to go and be. I, too, am the master of few things, but the doer of many. Gaining some competence in various outdoor recreation activities, as well as other areas of my life, has helped me to fill the truthfulness of 2 Timothy chapter 1, verse 7. Quote, "For God hath not given us the spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of a sound mind," end quote. I believe through our involvement as mothers with our families, specifically in outdoor or other challenging activities, our children will come to see that we are women without the spirit of fear. Through our active participation in family recreation, we can influence the way daughters will see and value themselves as adult women, future wives, and mothers, and the way sons will see and value women as their future wives or co-workers. We can teach our children, male and female, how to treat women and how to be treated as a woman through recreation. It isn't just having doors opened, being escorted by the arm down the sidewalk, or ordering first at a restaurant. It is about respecting and seeing others' potential, as well as viewing a woman as a capable partner who can solve problems, persevere, excel, and meet challenges. Recognizing recreation's power for good and that play and recreation matter has set the stage for us to consider 4 ways we can more intentionally create and protect space and time for recreation. They are, first, make recreation and or family fun a priority. Second, minimize distractions of media and technology. Third, recognize the rejuvenating power of brief moments of freely chosen experiences. Fourth, simplify life. So first, to make recreation, play, and family fun a priority, we have to believe it matters as much or more than whatever else we may choose to do in our, quote, free time. Simply put, we need to make it a priority and protect time for it. If we believe that it matters, we will be more likely to do it. Second, we can create space and time for recreation by minimizing distractions from media and technology. Often, they will fill time that could be used for not only active recreation, but also more meaningful interactions. Concerns with increasing media and technology use are one area that experts such as psychologists, physicians, family therapists, and our church leaders tend to agree. On a basic level, think for a minute about where the main TV is in your home or your parents' home. Is it in a place of prominence? Is it the focal point of the room or house? How many TVs are in your home? It is much easier to minimize the distraction of TV when it isn't front and center in our lives. It is easy to use TV and movies as a crutch when children need something to do. Yet, they aren't doing anything. We've used them that way ourselves as parents. For example, movies while riding in vehicles provide the illusion that we all love traveling together in the car. With a movie playing, of course we do. As long as we aren't touching one another, we can happily ignore each other and our surroundings. But movies, or earbuds for that matter, replace real communication, requiring listening and responding, the opportunity for ingenuity, and the chance to learn to get along. In early May, we were getting ready to go to my parents' home in Ogden. Although our new boys had met my parents, they had not been to their house. Shortly before leaving, I was upstairs printing something off the computer, and Eric called up to me, kind of in code, and he said, "Are you at all interested in the car?" The blank was movie, but he didn't want to say it out loud. As background, a few months earlier, we'd bought a portable two-screen DVD player for occasional use in our vehicles. Walmart had them on sale for $50. That's why it came home. Also, we hadn't watched any television, none, or movies since we'd been home with our new boys. Although using moderation in TV viewing is an important principle, there were far more important interactions to have during that time. Without hesitation, I called down quickly, "No." He quickly replied, "Good, neither am I." Right after that, the oldest of our new boys came upstairs and asked me if I would write for him. I was just finishing the printing and we were hurrying to leave, so I asked him to get a pencil and paper and I would write for him in the car. I had no idea what he had in mind. When we got in the car, he passed up the paper and pencil to me. Over the next 20 minutes, he'd tell me something to write, stop and think, and then share another thought. His English was quite limited. As his thoughts emerged, I felt immediate gratitude that we hadn't defaulted to a movie. The list he produced was a gift. I don't know if you can see that. Not only to his grandparents, but also to us. It was the first window into his heart and mind we'd really had. Thankfully, we had created the space to allow that interaction to occur. He began by simple things of saying, "I like my cat. I like my house. I like the book my grandma and grandpa gave to me. I like my car." Things like that. It was the first window that we had seen into his soul. Had we invited the movie, even if I'd said I'd write for him, it likely wouldn't have happened because of the excitement and distraction. Due to their pervasiveness, personal communication and technology devices pose a much greater source for potential distraction to quality time with others than TV or movies do. Researchers, as well as our church leaders, are concerned about the eroding effect these devices can have on human relationships and personal well-being. Dr. Sherry Turkle, author of the recent book, Alone Together, Why We Expect More from Technology and Less from Each Other, stated in a recent New York Times article, quote, "We are tempted to think that our little sips of online connection add up to a big gulp of real conversation. Connecting in sips doesn't work when it comes to understanding and knowing one another. We expect more from technology and less from one another and seem increasingly drawn to technologies that provide the illusion of companionship without the demands of relationship. We think constant connection will make us feel less lonely. The opposite is true. If we are unable to be alone, we are far more likely to be lonely. If we don't teach our children to be alone, they will know only how to be lonely." Similarly, Elder David A. Bednar, in an address at BYU-Idaho in May 2009 titled, "Things as They Really Are," stated, "An immature or misguided spouse may devote an inordinate amount of time to playing video games, chatting online, or in other ways allowing the digital to dominate things as they really are. Initially, the investment of time may seem relatively harmless, rationalized as a few minutes of needed relief from the demands of a hectic daily schedule. But important opportunities are missed for developing and improving interpersonal skills, for laughing and crying together, and for creating a rich and enduring bond of emotional intimacy. Progressively, seemingly innocent entertainment can become a form of pernicious enslavement. We owe it to our spouses, children, friends, and ourselves to honestly evaluate the use of personal technology and communication devices and make changes as needed. Third, by thinking of recreation not only as activity, but also a state of mind, allows us to seek and value the rejuvenating power of brief moments of freely chosen experiences. Due to work, school, church, and family obligations, we truly may not have much time, much unobligated time for anything else. Often, on days when I get home and I'm still feeling a bit stressed, before going into the house, I walk out of the garage and back down our driveway to look out at the Walsburg Valley, the back of Timpanogos, and rub on our horses. I take a few deep breaths, often express thanks to my Father in heaven for this beautiful world and his creations, and truly feel rejuvenated by those short moments and grateful for them. Sure, I'd love to have gone for a walk or been on a horse, but when those things don't happen, I seek out small moments with restorative power and use them for their benefit or for their potential. Don't overlook opportunities for brief moments that rejuvenate. Fourth, a simplified life allows more opportunities to be intentional with our time to pursue things that matter most. Like many of you and your travels, the time we've spent in Ghana, as well as villages in Samoa and Fiji, they have shaped our view of life and specifically how we view stuff and the busyness of life and the hassles we make for ourselves by some cumbersome habits we create. For example, at church in Ghana, I noticed the children didn't have a church bag from which they could pick several toys or a small buffet of snacks. There were no containers of Cheerios. Yet somehow they got through church. With those images in mind, after we adopted our first boys, we intentionally minimized the amount of stuff we took to church or in the car. Our boys have done just fine. They've learned to talk to each other and us, think of and play car games, or simply look out the window and daydream. I was also struck by the many children I saw running along with a stick hitting a rock or playing soccer with a threadbare ball on a rough, uneven dirt field without real goalposts. Their energy and zest signaled happiness to me. A few months ago, I read in the church news about Elder Holland's recent trip to West Africa. Then, just last week, I happened to be on the LDS.org website and saw a link to some video clips of his experience. And I heard the tender words spoken by Elder Holland describing his time in West Africa. As I quote from Elder Holland's thoughts, you will see pictures from our recent trip to pick up our boys. I quote Elder Holland, "These people don't believe you have to have a lot of material goods to be happy. They seem to have been able to separate in their minds that those things, goods and acquisitions, don't have anything to do with being happy. It is an element of their faith that we would do well to copy and remember and teach. They are very happy people without much. I bow my head in their presence. They've had so little, and they do so much with the gospel. There is a faith and purity about these people that just leaves me awestruck. It is very, very easy to love them. It is their uncompromised joy in the gospel. They've had so little. They've had so little in their lives of material goods, but when they got the gospel, they just embraced it hook, line, and sinker." End quote. A simpler, less hectic, less material-based life will not leave us feeling less happy or fulfilled. As we simplify, there will be more time and more money for things that matter most. Sister Julie B. Beck reminded us a few years ago to be wise with how we use our time and our resources. She refers to mothers, but I believe it applies to all. Mothers who know do less. They permit less of what will not bear good fruit eternally. They allow less media in their homes, less distraction, less activity that draws their children away from their homes. Mothers who know are willing to live on less and consume less of the world's goods in order to spend more time with their children, more time eating together, more time working together, more time reading together, more time talking, laughing, singing, and exemplifying. These mothers choose carefully and do not try to choose at all. Their goal is to prepare future fathers and mothers who will be builders of the Lord's kingdom for the next 50 years. That is influence. That is power. In conclusion, let me share a final story. In mid-June, I took our boys for a short last-minute trip to my parents' cabin while my husband was at scout camp. My sister joined us for the two-night trip. While there, we took the boys on a short hike to a creek. The weather and water were a little too chilly to make playing in the creek much fun, so we just enjoyed the area for a few minutes before walking back. At one point, the oldest of our new boys found some downed, dead trees to walk on like a balance beam. They were piled higher and higher on top of each other as he worked his way around them in a U-shape. At one point, limbs from a live tree, pine tree, impeded his path across the log, and at that time, he was about 4 or 5 feet off the ground. High enough, the tree limbs caused him to question his course of action. He stopped, glanced at me, and looked at the needled limbs. I was about to suggest he just turn around and come back the other way. When he straightened himself up, he squared his shoulders, kind of puffed out his chest even, and he sang out with conviction, "I will go, I will do," in the rhythm to the chorus of the familiar primary song. Those were probably the only words he knew from the song at that time. And then he proceeded to step over the limbs and finished his course on top of the logs. He had a simple goal: experience an obstacle challenging his path, stop to consider his options, and then found his conviction to go and to do. It is my hope we will have a goal to intentionally use our recreation time such that we enhance those relationships and aspects that matter most in our lives. I hope when distractions and challenges of technology and time, priorities and professions, media and minutiae get in the path of our intentional recreation, we will figuratively square our shoulders and say, "I will go, I will do." And we will stay the course to leverage the good in recreation to its full potential in our lives. Thank you.